This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 14th of October, 2022, and whiplash-inducing session yesterday is what you could call it. So we had that very hot core CPI print in the U.S. For September, 0.6% versus the 0.4% expected. And it took the year-on-year level to the highest since whatever it was, 40 years, early 80s. Regardless, this set, of course, U.S. yields, so the whole yield curve lifting higher. But then very quickly, we saw quite a turnaround, and we'll discuss what we think might have been behind this turnaround. But a tremendous rally intraday in the equity market. Interesting in the yields market, just so we see, some things were similar there, at least at the long end of the curve. So yields pushed higher. We saw a new cycle high in the 10-year, decently above 4%, and reversed back within range by the end of the day, sort of helping sentiment, I guess, on that front. I'll make one small point here, or actually two points. One is that there is some argument that this was a less ominous sign of core CPI increasing if you look at that owner equivalent rent measure, which is somewhat of an artificial measure. And just as it was sort of under indicating where inflation really was early in the inflation cycle, now that the inflation cycle is more mature, it may be a badly lagging, sort of indicating more inflation than there really is in the space of rents here. But anyway, it was at 0.8%, and that's 24% of the CPI weight. So that's a considerable driver of this figure. And then the other thing I would point out is very technical situation yesterday for the NASDAQ 100, hitting its 61.8% retracement of the entire rally off of the 2020 pandemic lows. That level was 10,589 on the cash index. We did go slightly below that, but that was right around where we found support, just like we did find support in the S&P at the 50% retracement. That slipped as well slightly, but that was at 3505 on the cash index. That 3500 level was a big technical level, as our technical analyst Kim has talked about. So I'll leave it over to you, Peter, but I suspect there were some indicating as well that there were, given that huge, if you look at that chart there on slide two, by the way, the S&P 500, you see that gigantic sell-off bar from September, I believe it was 10th. The last CPI release. So there's a big recognition and probably a heck of a lot of hedging coming into this data point yesterday because of people know it's a big event risk. So it does trigger the spillover, and a lot of these derivatives trades and hedges probably lifted as we were selling into new lows. So I think you'll agree, largely technical and maybe derivatives flow driven this move. But of course, we don't know how long it can stick. But anyway, over to you, Peter.
Yeah, I agree with that. If it was the case that there was a lot of hitching around it, it makes sense that you have such a big reversal after initial sell-off. Of course, a lot of stop orders, etc., were coming through there. And just the comeback itself, to me, I'm not putting too much weight on the trading session. I put it in our quick take this morning. I said there was probably one of the weirdest trading sessions in a long, long time. Probably a lot of dealer market making trading firm realignment of their inventory and positions short term. I would wait until next week to really get a better idea of how the broader investor community is reacting to these inflationary figures. And also I put this snippet in from Twitter sentiment trader. It's one of the biggest reversals of all time, at least as long as history is available for. Or data sources available for this guy. So, but looking back multiple decades, it was a big move. And then, of course, as we look at the across the theme baskets, the big moves yesterday was in our nuclear power theme. We talked about it yesterday as well. The Cameco, Brookfield Renewable Partners takeover of Westinghouse Electric. Cameco CEO highlighting a wave of demand is coming, especially from Europe relative to expectation, with Eastern European countries driving it. Defense was strong, semiconductors and commodities. So a lot of price action to chew on there for the market. we're going into the weekend, I don't expect a lot of action here. I think where we're sitting here on the S&P 500, I think is right in the at the midpoint between the recent lows, as we sort of exclude the yesterday's session, and then the high is just north of 3,800. So I think we're just at that midpoint in terms of retracement levels, and I think that's a fine place for the market to be rolling into the weekend.
Yeah, there's an interesting reaction across Forex as well. So of course, dollar largely aligning with risk sentiment and the sort of more, you know, classically pro-risk currencies, the ones that trade in correlation with risk sentiment, seeing the biggest dip and recovery yesterday. So as I show on slide 3, Aussie dollar hitting a, you know, pretty impressive new lows there, well below, I believe it was below 62 at one point, and we rebounded all the way to almost 63.5 this morning. But despite that kind of price action, you can see that you would really need to, I think, erase all the price action back to 65 and at least challenge above 64 to indicate that we're in a more profound reversal here. And then elsewhere, there was a decent rebound. A euro dollar did rebound from local new lows, but we're not sort of out of the woods yet there. That needs to get above the 98 to 98.50 area, I believe, to look like it's going to challenge parity again. And dollar yen, interestingly, just sort of pinned higher, even though those long U.S. yields reversed. And we actually touched, I think it was a single pip above the 1998 highs, 140. I'm losing track of these data points. So 140, whatever it is, 147.66, I believe is the number, 147.66, yeah, was very briefly exceeded yesterday. So still a lot of concern. Yen very weak here. Sterling has recovered considerably. There's thoughts that this government is going to reverse on most of the measures in the mini budget. I still have ongoing questions about these energy subsidies. I think that's still a big risk for Sterling, but it's on the recovery path. Let's see if it can challenge 115. I'm thinking we might be near the peak near term for what Sterling can wring out of this situation. But of course, we could see more there. Or in your space, this has been a key concern with what the U.S. dollar is doing. So obviously, there must have been some reaction across commodities here. Take us through what you're seeing.
Yeah, well, there was a risk sentiment, or that improved risk sentiment yesterday, spilling over from the weaker dollar, most certainly also supported some of the commodities. We had quite a bit of a sell-off in the gold market early in the day. They'd still managed to recover back into the 1660 to 1680 range, because we also have to note that on the day, the yields did still rise, both in the short end and the long end of the yield curve. So that market is still not poised for a proper pop. So for now, it's range bound. Crude oil managed to bounce as well. The political rift between, I would say, the West and OPEC continues. Following that production cut last week, the general belief in the West is that this was supporting Putin, while it was not supporting the global consumer. It also raised the risk that with OPEC Plus being Russia being the second in command in this group, any future potential rate or production increases, Russia could potentially be in a situation where they could veto that, because future production increase at this point is not something that Russia can contribute to, and so it's left them in a bit of a pickle. So we'll see how this situation unfolds on the oil market front. But we remain fairly elevated here, and the outlook for that I think remains that it will continue to be supported. But I just want to highlight another sector which has really been under the weather for quite a while. That's the industrial metal space. We've seen we're heading for what looks like a third weekly jump here in prices. We are not only seeing some Chinese demand starting to pick up, we also continue to have to live with the potential export ban concerns related to supplies from Russia, especially this week. Aluminium was mentioned. Equinor in an update was out saying that parts of the European industrial hubs could see deindustrialization because of the high gas prices. It could force fertilizer, steel, and aluminium facilities to shut down, and that's obviously also potentially creating some tightness. So overall, inventory levels are low, recession risks are high, but at the same time, if there's any signs of stabilization on that front, we could see industrial metals move higher again.
And it looks like on the natural gas situation there, you're showing it on slide 5 with the U.S. Really, I must be some pretty mild weather, those injections looking tremendous here.
It is indeed, but I think the main reason is that we while shale oil is still stuck in neutral, not seeing any pickup in production, and we actually did see 100,000 barrel adjustment lower last week, back below 12 million barrels a day. The same thing is not happening in the natural gas market, where production is has seen a very robust increase. We're up 6.5% year on year. You can see that in the on slide 5 there in the middle chart. U.S. production above 100 billion cubic feet a day, and together with the relatively mild weather into the early parts of the autumn and early winter, we're seeing stockpiles really accelerating quite nicely. So we're not far away from the long-term average. It's not the kind of outlook we were looking for just a few months ago. It has to be added as well, U.S. LNG export capacity is still somewhat impacted by disruption, and at the same time, Chinese authorities are indicating that they are going to need less LNG this coming winter, simply because the economic activity is so much lower than it was in the previous winter, and that will leave plenty of LNG flowing around the seas, and that obviously supported for Europe as well in our efforts to be independent of Russian supplies.
Yeah, and interesting as well. You talk about China. Of course, they've cranked up coal production, I think, to record levels. And that's helping them on the electricity generation front, if it's not helping the globe on the climate front. And then you have an interesting chart, just shows the ongoing collapse in these container shipping prices, but with an interesting exception on slide 6.
Yeah, exactly, and the container shipping rates, which obviously attracted a lot of attention during the lockdowns, because we all went spending crazy buying stuff from Asia that need to be transported. We ended up with bottlenecks, containers in the wrong place, and not being able to be delivered back to Asia at a high enough pace, leading to very very high prices. We're seeing the reverse, continued reverse. We're now down 66% on the global composite index from the peak last September, but given the fact we're still 2.5x above the pre-COVID average, you could argue that the index has further to fall. It has been on the China to LA route, but as you also actually one still picking moving higher, and that's Europe to US, and you can only speculate, but obviously the much weaker euro this year potentially providing some relief to European exporters, especially when it comes to exporting goods to the US.
Interesting. Okay, we are cranking into earnings season in a big way with the big banks reporting today. That's a lot of that's up, is it not? At least during market hours or before market hours, Peter. But take us through the stocks you're watching today and this earnings calendar that's picking up next week as well.
Yeah, it is we have the earnings release for the US banks before the US market opens, and we're coming into these banking earnings with very low expectations. And just as an example, the earnings per share for JPMorgan Chase is expected to be down 24% year a year. Of course, driven by a deterioration in the net interest margin, a slowdown in debt and equity capital issuance, etc. So there's multiple things hitting the banking sector, and the key focus point, of course, for US banks will be the net interest margin. It did expand a little bit in the previous quarter on quarter, and then of course the credit provisions. But given the latest commentaries from Jamie Dimon, etc., I mean, I'm very curious to see what they put out in their outlook. And then here in Europe, we have had a preliminary operating result from KONE. KONE is producing elevators for construction buildings, if you will, and they're missing against estimates, and I'm not really surprised about that. I expect the building and the construction segment to continue to be weak with these rising interest rates. And then you have a company like Hexagon Composites, which is, as the name says, constructing or manufacturing a lot of composite materials, and they're also cutting their operating profit guidance for the fiscal year that ends in December. And as they say, they are still seeing exceptionally high cost of production. I think that's a remark to the energy cost, etc. If we go to the earnings calendar, we can see next week what is really moving on here, or moving the market. So we have Bank of America on Monday, Tuesday, I've highlighted Lockheed Martin. I could highlight, or maybe I should have highlighted, Johnson & Johnson. It's a big consumer company in the healthcare part of the market. And then Wednesday, ASML, the semiconductors equipment maker, given the latest export restrictions from the US, of course, this has a lot of attention, I think, for the industry. What are they seeing in terms of demand? Also, because the US is restricting several equipment manufacturers like Lam Research, also ASML, from selling equipment into China. So ASML and Lam Research are actually reporting both on Wednesday. And then with Tesla on Wednesday as well, a lot of attention given the latest deliveries miss. What are their outlook for the last quarter, but also what are their comments on the rising input costs from lithium, et cetera. On Thursday, here in Europe, focus on ABB and Ericsson, two macro stocks, and then in the US, Freeport, McMoRan, which is a big copper producer, interesting one for the given the latest irritations in the copper market, and then Danaher, which is a big industrial company in the US for a macro insight. And on Friday, we close the week off with Schlumberger, always being the first major energy company. They are an oil services company. So Schlumberger is much more forward-looking in terms of what we can expect from the CapEx side. American Express, of course, important from the consumer side. And then this comes with uncertainty. CATL, the world's largest battery maker, on Friday is scheduled to report. I don't know whether it's a small preliminary update. This seems to be a little bit not always the firm dates that we have on the Chinese companies. So we might change our calendar as we go along next week.
All right. And then up today on the macro calendar, that retail sales data point from the U.S., still expecting these core retail sales to drop slowly, or not to drop, but the levels are very low and they've been falling since earlier this year. So only 0.2% expected month on month for the ex auto and gas reading, and the same at the headline. And remember, these are nominal figures, so not very impressive indeed. Let's see where that retail sales number is. The first of the October Michigan sentiment, the one that's more inflation sensitive. Where are we in terms of that bounce back? And three, no fewer than three Fed voters out speaking. I think we kind of know the plot here from the Fed. We've had so much in the way of updates there. But speaking on the inflation outlook, the Fed's cook later, whereas Waller will speak on digital currencies, central bank digital currencies. I think that's going to be a very interesting topic in the next down cycle. We won't get into that right now, though. And then at the weekend, as we highlighted yesterday, Xi Jinping to address the Party Congress. This is a massive speech. What is the nature of the response to the U.S. Moves to limit Chinese access to technology, especially in the semiconductor space? To what degree do we see some chest thumping from Xi Jinping, if you will, in a manner of speaking anyway, and this more outwardly aggressive style that we've seen under his leadership? Also, Bank of England Governor Bailey is out speaking. I think this man's time in office is drawing short, but let's see where they are. And next week, I won't go into all the details. We'll look at it on Monday because there's very little Monday, as usual, with only the October U.S. Empire Manufacturing, the first of the regional manufacturing surveys for the month. But fairly quiet week, except for little bits and pieces like the UK CPI and the Japanese CPI, maybe a bit interesting, but going to get even more interesting in October, given some of the potential for food prices to reset this month, according to at least some of the sources I've been looking at. And you can look at the longer-term event risks as well. The ECB meeting, a bit interesting, as they're going to be discussing QT at that meeting on October 27th, that has been made clear, but looking only to kick off sometime next year. I think they're hoping that the Fed might have turned around by then, and they'll never really have to kick off QT in any meaningful way, because I think you'll see a situation somewhat akin to what the Bank of England has run into with its attempts to signal QE. But yeah, let's see how that develops in the coming weeks. That is it for today. Again, we think this rally is, we have to respect the technical situation with a rally like this, but that it may be misleading, or it'd be difficult to sort of take any information value out of a move like that. So we think we should continue to stay careful out there. Have a great weekend when you get there, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.